Everybody here okay in the back? Can you hear Ellen? So we're on chapters 4 and 5 this time in our book, The Power of Coincidence, How Life Shows Us What We Need to Know. And since we have 2 weeks in between, if you can read the rest of the chapters, so that would be starting from chapter 6 on 109 and reading the final chapters and the epilogue. So that will take us to 183. It's actually having that extra week helps us because it gives us a chance to do more in the reading. I wanted to just begin with reading a few sentences on this, on page 67, the beginning of chapter 4, which is about our time and place. And this also reminds us of our overall topic. The fact that meaningful coincidences happen to us beyond our conjuring gives us evidence that we are not alone in the world. Rather, the world is wonderfully in on the fulfillment of our life purpose. The most brilliant fact that synchronicity reveals is the oneness of the world and our inner self. And over on the next page, I give a quotation from John Muir, who says, when you try to pick out one thing in nature, you notice that it's hitched to all the other things. And that would also be true of our psyche. It doesn't stand alone any more than a tree stands alone. It's connected to all the other psyches and to everything in nature. So when coincidences happen beyond our control, beyond our ability to make them happen, it gives us a clue that there's something more going on, that this psyche of ours is not limited to our own heads, but is connected to everything else. Hence this quotation by Jung, the psyche is not localized, I'm on page 68, second paragraph, the psyche is not localized in space, it's not here inside of our head. The psyche is not in us at all. We're in the psyche. The soul is mostly outside of our body. Psyche and body are not separate entities, but one and the same life. Ultimately, every individual life is the same as the eternal life of the entire species. So who we are is the same as, intimately connected to, everybody else on the planet, not only now, but going all the way back to the beginning of beings on the planet. Everybody follow that concept? Okay, so that gives us like a little summary background to our overall topic. And I want to begin with our new material with this idea of how everything does not rely on our own efforts. What synchronicity tells us is that there will be a coincidence between our intention and whatever efforts go with our intention, and graces that come our way. So combination of efforts and grace, this is how we fulfill ourselves. We don't fulfill ourselves just through our own efforts. So if I want to nail a picture onto the wall, it's just finding a nail and a hammer and finding the stud where to place the nail, and the job is done. But when it comes to completing myself as a human, it will not be enough, that effort. There will also be another force that joins in, that comes from beyond ourselves and yet at the same time from deeply within ourselves and all of nature, and that's called grace. So I'll be spending time on that topic today. But I want to use the analogy of bread making. So you would certainly need the bread, K-N-E-A-D. So you would need the dough, rather. And that would not be enough. You would have to let it rise in the dark only then would it be ready for a baking. This is an analogy, a wonderful metaphor for how our own psyche moves along on the spiritual path. We put in some efforts, like the kneading of the dough, but at a certain point we have to let go and just let it rise on its own, and this often happens in the dark. So what I'm saying is that when we go through periods that are dark for us, including periods of depression, and we think, oh, this is wasted time, it could be that this is the time needed, no pun intended, for the dough of ourselves to rise so that we can become the living bread. What we're saying here is that I can trust the dark times in which I don't put in effort, I can't put in effort, that would only mess it up. I just have to allow. And this combination of trusting and allowing is openness to grace, which is a free gift that comes to everyone at any time. And we prepare ourselves, we present ourselves for it when we trust the eras in our life in which we're not in control. And those eras will sometimes be dark, painful, depressing, etc. So here I'm making the case for an acceptance of the whole look of our life rather than everything depends on effort, and I have to see how the efforts are paying off. Everybody get the basic idea of all this? So part of this will be an awareness of timing. Now I'm on page 78 and I have my list. So, oh, before I go on to that, any questions about this part? I'm going to expand on this shortly, but I just wanted to give an overview of it first. So part of this trusting and allowing would be opening ourselves to the timing that has to happen. So when you cover the dough with a clean cloth, then you have to honor the timing that it will take for it to rise. You can't force it to rise faster. you can't slow it down. That's something like how our own continual evolution proceeds. And this would mean that we would become aware of time. So there's a time, for instance, to put out a lot of effort, take hold, and make things happen. But there's also a time to let go. I presume we've all noticed this one time or another. There's a time to put up a fight, but there's also a time to retreat and give up the fight. There's a time in life when you take on more cargo, more responsibilities, have another child, get an extra job, taking on more responsibility. And there are times when you have to jettison the cargo and let it go. When you get to the empty nest, for instance, you want to hold on to the child, you want to let him launch out into the world. Sometimes you have to really go for it. And other times you have to wait for it, whatever the bit they happen to be. Sometimes you will want to be involved with other people and join in groups. Other times you will want to be alone. And one would have to know one's own timing. And we weren't really trained to do this. We weren't trained to know our timing. We were just told you have to do what you have to do. But see, your timing for being alone for a while could be happening on your wedding day. You know, you chose the wedding day because that's the conventional plan that you have to follow. Whereas deep down, there was another timing going on that you had to disregard, cancel out, rather than honor. And so things won't feel quite right because you're not acting in accord with the natural timing within you. So we could say that every single person has a timing change, shall we say, that's unique and that other people don't really know about. It's in the core of yourself. And sometimes you can be aware of it, like you can say something like, well, I'm really peopled out now, I need just to sit back and relax. We all have said something like that. But on bigger concerns, larger waves by which our life is measured, we might be following a conventional path rather than being aware of that intuitive sense of when I need to pull back or step forward. So there are times in life when you will want to speak up, and other times when you'll want to be silent. And you know, in our public school training, we were taught that only what's here on the left side, keep taking hold, keep fighting, keep going for it, keep speaking up. We were taught that these are the values that we're supposed to follow. They weren't making room for the other side, which is equally legitimate. And we certainly live in a society that puts the accent on the active style, very extroverted. And so when you go to this other side, which is more introverted, where you're more depleted if you are too involved with other people, the world won't make room for that because it doesn't operate on that basis. Everything is manic and active. So part of becoming whole is being able to say no to the convention that we're faced with that tells us we're the little engine that could, and we have to keep going and don't give up. And, you know, every man can be president, that kind of thing. Sometimes it's important to pull the weeds, so that's the yanking. But if you have a fig tree, you have learned that if the fig has to be yanked to get it off the tree, that means it isn't ready. It isn't ripe. When you slightly tug and it comes off, that's when it's ripe. So you'd have to know in your own life, well, is this the time to yank or is this the time to tug, if you see what I mean. And there will even be times when you feel like everything is going great, everything's coming up roses, and you feel like a whole person. But there will be other times when you feel fragmented. Even that, even the fragmented side of us is legitimate. Remember I gave the example last time of Osiris being cut up into 14 pieces. And that in his fragmented state, it was in his fragmented state that he was able to draw to himself the graceful ministry of his sister, wife and aunt. And questions about this part? What I'm trying to show is the legitimacy of both sides, and that the synchronicities are more likely to occur when we're honoring our own timing rather than being caught in the timing that the rest of the world thinks we should be in. We've all heard the expression, oh, you should be over it by now. For that's not honoring your timing, because the grief that it will take you to get over something has nothing to do with the standard way it happens. Question?
It seems like the issue, though, is having the wisdom to know the difference.
Yes.
And
that's, I'm going to go on to that.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about how to be able to tell. Yes. We'll go on to that. Yes.
I see my wife is a very, very busy lady, and she fails to take the right side side into question. And every 4 or 5 days she gets exhausted, where she's forced to do it. Is that the pleasure?
That's the idea. Well, it would be that, one of the ways to know you're not in your timing is that you get exhausted. And you're way overdoing it on the take, hold, fight, speak up, and all that. You know that you're in your, shall we say, personally accurate timing when these are not exhausting. They might be pleasantly fatiguing, but they don't totally wear you out.
He does that stress.
As a child, though, if you sense that you need to back off, then you're called lazy, or you're called self-centered, or snob, or what?
Right.
So that's very much the
direction. Very good point.
In general, would the left side appeal to the masculine in us and the right side appeal to the feminine?
Yes, more so. Right. Although that shouldn't be the way the distinction is made.
It should be legitimate for either sex to be on either side. Other questions about this? Yep.
Are you hearing me?
Everybody can hear okay?
Yeah.
Let me just read this paragraph on 79. So I had made a list here. On the left side, I have the take hold, fight, take on more cargo. On the right side, I have the let go, retreat. Both are equally legitimate. So the left is the active and the right is the receptive. It's more likely when you're on the right side, the receptive side, that grace comes your way. I'll be talking about grace in detail shortly. Both sides have a gift dimension. Both initiate us into something and console us. These are like a yin and yang. And they're features of our psyche. And in every story, we notice that the hero goes to both sides of the river of experience. For instance, let's use a simple example. If you take the movie that we've all seen, Robin Hood, Adventures of Robin Hood, you see him with all of his daring do, with all his fighting and sword fighting and so forth. But then you'll also see him alone in prison, waiting to be hanged. And notice that when he's alone in prison, waiting to be hanged, if you can picture that scene, that's when Maid Marian takes over. She hatches a plan to save him from being hanged, if you remember that. And in the next scene after, he goes to thank her. So there's something about the hero giving himself permission, consenting to the let-go retreat style that invites the feminine. Feminine represents grace. So the fragmented body of Osiris invites Isis. The Robin Hood in prison invites Maid Marian. One more example comes to me in the cartoon version of Pinocchio. After he's spit out of the whale, he's lying waterlogged on the beach, if you remember that scene. Looks like he's pretty much had it. And that's when the blue fairy, feminine, appears and turns him into a real boy. So it's always the same. It's always the moment at which the hero has expended all his effort, has done all he could do, and now has let go. That's when the feminine force of grace comes to help. And this is not gender related, so it's the same style for women as for men. It can't be that every story has this style, and it isn't true of our psyche at a very deep level. It couldn't be that stories from Egypt or Germany or America or England, from wherever they come, it couldn't be that they all say, when you let go, the feminine power of grace comes and helps you. Couldn't be that that's just coincidence. That is a synchronicity, a meaningful coincidence of stories to tell us how our psyche is shaped and how it works. It's shaped with both sides, and when it's on the left side, it's called effort. And on the right side, letting go, retreat, and so forth, it's openness to grace. Both will be required for the story to be complete. Any questions about this part? Hey, John.
Is this because we're right brain and left brain?
Yes, it fits with that also.
And then you put the same.
Left and right, yes. Because the left side will be more logical and get on things and work them out. This will also be true psychologically, by the way. Let's say a person comes to therapy because he's just been through a terrible loss, breakup, or death. Well, then the work, the psychological work that faces him is to look at what happens straight on without denying it, to feel the feelings that go with it, that go with the loss, and somehow to move toward resolving what's happening in him so that he can get on with life. Come in with a problem, look at the problem, explore the feelings you're having about it, and do this long enough, keep processing what happened to you, then it finally resolves itself. How do you know it's resolved itself? It no longer has such a heavy charge on you. You just take it in your stride and you live with it. You have consented to it. You have accepted it. And now it's part of the landscape. Then you're ready to get on with your life. All of this is work that you would do. Hopefully the therapist helps you do this by facilitating this particular plan. But this will never be enough when you have a spiritual consciousness, because while you're doing this is the work, so this is your own effort, while you're doing this, many graces are coming your way. Because the looking, the willingness to look at something without denial and enlist the help of your higher power. Remember the first step of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous? We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. That's looking at what's actually going on, no longer denying it. And then when you do that, we turn to a power greater than ourselves. So the power greater than yourself wants to step in and help you when you're the person who's honestly looking. So all of this enlists graces that assist you in moving through. And you don't just need faith for this, because we've all noticed it. We have actual evidence. We've seen that when we honestly look at ourselves and look at what's happened with us and really work with it rather than spending all the time feeling like victims or blaming others, when we really stay with it, we've noticed that we just feel better even physically, and there's a kind of wholesomeness that comes through us. Those feelings of wholesomeness and even power are the presence of graces. Everybody else?
I'm a member of AA, and in our group we have one who refuses to accept anything even remotely about a higher power or anything concerning it. And all he ever has to share is the problem and how heavy it is on him and how it'll never go away. And it prompts him every day. He never speaks of the positive that is the outcome of acknowledging the need and accepting the need of a higher power. He's locked into that.
Well, many of us are finding ourselves that way at times. So that's where our work is, to open ourselves to these graces. But you see how powerful it is when the angel Gabriel says, "Hail, full of grace." Full of grace, with no effort whatsoever. She was just sitting there. She was not putting in any effort. And she receives this, "You're full of grace." So full that you can bring the divine to birth. I throw that in so that we could realize it isn't as if the graces come because of your effort. Sometimes they come with no effort at all. Because this very word grace, the English gratis, is free. You don't have to pay for it. Grace comes to us without our having to deserve it, the same way we were supposed to love each other. So I have my quotation here from the Upanishads. These are the scriptures of Hinduism. And by the way, the self here refers to the higher self of wholeness, the what we would call higher power. Page 80. The Vedas refer to the scriptures. The self can not be gained by the Vedas, nor by understanding, nor by learning. He whom the self chooses, by him the self is gained. So, a choice is being made in this process of receiving grace, and it isn't based on how much you've learned or how much you're doing. And just look at that first paragraph on page 80. That pulls together this, what I just mentioned. So our psychological work takes effort. For instance, handling fear, being more assertive, dealing with your inner child issues. Our spiritual practice requires some effort. We meditate, we're mindful, we engage in rituals, prayer, compassionate action. And this is like the kneading of the dough. But for the bread to result, there has to be a period of rising in which work ceases and nature takes over. This is what is meant by grace. A force that takes over where will, effort, and intelligence leave off. So that's why the quotation says it can't be gained by the Vedas, by understanding or learning. It's where all that leaves off. That's where grace takes over. It's a mysterious endowment freely given, not the result of work. But it often can't happen without the work. As we see in the quotation, that you still put in effort, but it isn't the effort that does it. So the effort is the choice and the grace is the free gift. And over on page 81, that last paragraph, this is the advocate archetype. An archetype is an energy that is in all humans, no matter what your race or creed may be. Each person is born with certain energies. And these energies are like themes in human experience. For instance, even if we never had a mother that we remember or saw a mother, we would know deep down that there's such a thing as a female who gives nurturance in a motherly way. because that energy is in us. So also in us is the helper, the sense that we're being assisted in whatever we do, the assisting force that helps the hero when he has nothing going for him but his own limited ego. And it's often symbolized in mythology as the aid coming from a god. Sometimes it's symbolized by a talisman, an elixir, special potion, some form of magic. These were all symbols of grace. And grace is that which can't be willed by the ego. It's a free gift of the universe. So the attitude for the work is to gird oneself and get going. And the attitude for grace is let go and let it happen. And the grace often enters the story, as I said, in the moments in which the hero is down and out, at his worst, having nothing left, having nothing going for him anymore, because all of his powers have been snuffed out. And that's the very moment at which the grace comes into play.
Do we each have the same archetype?
Yes.
Thank you.
Because Jung calls the archetypes the psychic instincts, and everybody has the full set of these instincts. These archetypes show themselves in characters from stories. So if you want to know what are the archetypes inside me and inside everyone, it's a male and female. So every man has male and female energies. Every woman has male and female energies. We all have the mother energy, father energy, child energy. We all have the king and queen energy. So this would be the male and female with the full powers. We all have the trickster energy we talked about last week. The part of us that will turn things topsy-turvy so that we see things in a whole new way. The rascal type of archetype. And we all have the shadow, which I talked about last month or so. This is our dark side. This is where our unacceptable impulses are. Also our untapped talents. And we have the archetype of the assisting force, which is our topic right this minute. These are the assisting forces, actually. And we have the afflicting forces, so it's a reminder of what we talked about before. The assisting forces help us along our path, show us the way, and the afflicting forces get in the way. They present the obstacles, but they help us ultimately because they make us stronger so we can deal with obstacles. Everything in here is meant to help us because we're geared for survival. Survival in the psychic world is not about food, clothing, and shelter. The meaning of survival in the psychic world is to be able to be your complete self and move along on your journey through life to fulfill yourself. That would be the equivalent of food, clothing, and shelter. And so we're geared with psychic instincts that help us do this. So we have physical instincts that help us with the eating, clothing, and shelter. We learn how to gather food and eat it, foods that help us. And we learn how to build a house to be safe from the storm. And so we have those instincts physically, but psychically, we have an instinct to go with our male energy, female energy, create motherly moments for ourselves and others, and receive motherly moments from others, create fatherly moments for ourselves and others, and receive them, etc. When you visit all these, and all these archetypes, and let them all emerge in your life story, then you're a complete human being. So if you were brought up, I should never be in any way feminine, and all the mother stuff is sissy stuff, if you're going to cancel out some of these, then you wouldn't wind up being a complete person. They're not gender related, as I said before. This is for both male and female. Questions on this part? It's a little bit off topic.
I have a comment that
yes.
I like the way you're explaining it as in service to our psyche.
Yes.
And another way that I thought of it is that we can also sort of get caught up or tangled in archetypal energies that are even more broad or specific, like a Peter Pan Schuller type.
Yes.
Energy, and sometimes the recognition of how these energies have gone askew or how we're caught or tangled up in them can also help to bring insight or bring us back to this. I kind of see what you're describing here as a balance of the archetypes.
Yes.
And when they're in balance, then they serve us, but when they're not, then maybe they don't as much.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth is bringing up an important point, which is that we were meant to relate to the archetypes and integrate them into our lives, not get caught in one of them so that we became possessed by it. So Hitler, for instance, is possessed by the one archetype, the dark side of the shadow. He's not relating to this, as we all need to do. We all need to look at ourselves and say, hey, I could be mean and cruel. I have to admit that. That's relating to your shadow. Whereas what he did was, I give myself to that. I'll be mean and cruel. That's my style. Following me? So sometimes people wind up being possessed by the archetype. When in medieval times, possessed by the dark side was called possession by the devil. Although sometimes it also refers to mental illness. So instead of being possessed, we're going to relate. And she mentioned one other archetype, which I don't have here. The Latin word for boy is puer, where we get the English word puerile, meaning adolescent acting. The puer archetype is modeled by Peter Pan. This is the flighty young fellow who has a girl in every port and he will never settle down. He can't make a commitment, but he's very charming. That you could be possessed by that archetype, then you wouldn't settle down. All right, other questions? Yes?
I'm just wondering if a person of faith manifests these characteristics in a different manner than a non-believer would.
Yes, that's a very good point, because in our traditional Catholic view, Catholicism allows for all the archetypes. It does not cancel out the feminine ones as much as some of the reformers did. So we acknowledge that we have a mother here on earth, but we go a step further and say Well, anything that you have here on earth, that's one of the archetypes of the unconscious, also exists in the spiritual realm. So we would call that our Heavenly Mother. And yes, there's a Hitler here on earth, but there's a Satan in hell. And if you stop to think of it, the saints, the many saints, represent various archetypes in the spiritual realm.
It sounds like a huge topic.
It's a very big topic, so we can't go into it too much, but you get the idea. So it'll feel more complete when your religious view allows you to embrace the archetypes as real, not only here in the world, in our own interactions, but in a helping world around us, a world of assisting forces of graces that are coming our way. When these graces come through in a motherly way, we think of it as a visit from Mary. When they come through in a wise way, wisdom archetype, we think of it as a visit from the Holy Spirit. When we get temptations, we think, oh, that's Satan trying to tempt me. And it's important to remember that these are all personifications. It's not as if they're literal literal beings like this that are coming into play. It's more like that their reality is spiritual rather than palpable and tangible. Certainly not provable. But we certainly all have had a sense, for instance, here's a good example. We have an earthly mother. We could have a memory of a moment in which, hopefully it was more than one moment, in which she was very nice to us and gave us a sense of safety and security. Like she held us in her arms and made everything seem okay. So that would be a motherly moment here on earth. But lighting a candle before a statue of the Virgin Mary and talking to her in your own words and having the sense that her eyes are looking right at you and that she loves you and cares about you, which many of us have experienced, many of us have had many times, she's giving us spiritual safety and security. Because she's the archetypal mother. And then finally, while we're in nature, we notice at times, just sitting quietly by a peaceful lake, a sense that all is right with the world, a sense of safety and security, that's Mother Nature coming through, also feminine. So the safety and security come from many different strains of influence on us, and whatever works for you is important for you to stay with. What did they call? So a religion is most complete when it offers you the chance for all these archetypes in the spiritual realm rather than canceling any of them out as unsuitable. And that would include the dark one. Okay, one last question, then we'll take our break, Gordon.
I also wanted to point out that there also is several mothers gurus and that people.
Oh, right.
Drawn to, including myself, actually. And that's another way of looking at it.
Yes. He's referring to like Indian mother teachers, who come across with a motherly energy. So the list would go on and on. I'm not just showing three or four of the main ways this would happen. But it's certainly true that every human wants motherly moments. And it's also true, although many of us would doubt this, that every one of us, male and female, can give a motherly moment. A nurturant holding that provides safety and security without making any demands. That's a motherly moment. Okay, so let's take a short break and then we'll continue.